Welcome to another episode of Adoption, The Making of Me.
I'm Louise Brown.
And I'm Sarah Reinhart.
Make sure to find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as Adoption, The Making of Me podcast.
You can also find us at our website, adoptionthemakingofme.com.
And please remember to subscribe, share, and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
In today's episode, we are concluding the book, I Would Meet You Anywhere by Susan Keo Ito, and we will be bringing on Susan Keo Ito for our finale. Stay tuned.
Hi, Louise.
Hi, Sarah.
Well, it's our weekly reminder about our Patreon because we have a Zoom coming up on April 6th, Saturday, April 6th. At what time?
Well, I think it's 1 p.m. Eastern. Yes.
So if you are a $10 or more Patreon, or you want to join
at or the $10 up your level.
Or up your level from 5 to 10, we have a monthly Zoom meeting with just a group of adoptees. It's a really great group. It's becoming like a community that I look forward to.
Me too. Actually, and we're actually going to be talking about a topic.
Attachment issues. What is your attachment style? Not issues. Okay. I didn't mean to say that. Attachment style. What is your attachment style?
Yeah. Adoptees don't have any attachment issues. So,
yeah. No. So,
we don't want to assume that you have that.
Not that I haven't been open about those things. Anyway, right. Mull on that, listeners. What is your attachment style? We're going to be talking about it.
We are. And also, don't forget our merch. We have merch.
Yes, we have merch. Really on our website. Merch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see it all on our website, adoptionthemakingofme.com.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey again, Louise.
I beat you to it.
I know. It's a race. Okay, so here we are, our final discussion of I Would Meet You Anywhere by Susan Keo Ito.
Yeah.
Gonna miss this book. It was so good. Susan. Wow.
Susan, her best writing. I mean, the whole thing was written well. It was the last couple chapters here. Or maybe I'm so into it, but, you know, we have to pace ourselves for this thing. Like, everybody else gets to blow through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of glad it. You know, because each word, like, I look forward to it. And then we really reflect on that section.
And we can savor it.
Savor it.
You know, and more. And then, like, it's just, it's the way we do it is it savors it.
Yeah, it really does. Well, I had an aunt is what we're starting. Aunt or aunt, depending on where you live.
I mean, yeah. Here in the Midwest, we say aunt. But then I also have many years of California and New York.
I know.
In, so I never would say auntie, though. That would not be my style.
No, it's not my style. But we know people who say auntie. Mm-hmm. So I have an aunt. And
or an aunt.
So Susan has found, we finally find out, she finds her birth father.
Yes.
But there's a twist.
And 36 months prior, I think it was, right? 3 years prior, he had died. So
how often do we hear this?
Oh, so much.
I was thinking how many guests have told us, oh, I was 2 years too late, year too late, 6 months too late. This is what non-adoptees don't really get, that it is a time race.
Kept privilege, yeah. And it's just not comprehensible. I don't think it's ever even thought about, you know, until we bring it up.
Yeah. She had some incredible lines in here. Like, she went on Ancestry had been on Ancestry DNA sites and had a friend who was helping her with the matches and everything like that, who's texting her one night, like, where are you? We have a second cousin. And a second, anything in the DNA is like the second thing is, what did she say? It's like the gold standard. Like,
yeah,
now you're in. You can track it down. And I didn't remember the part. Okay, so her biological father, I guess there was a mention in the something that happened in her adoption where it was like a funeral. He was a funeral home director. She got that somehow. I never really
Okay, yeah, that was in the non-identifying information.
Oh, right.
But also what was so interesting was that Yumi had told her Was it Yumi that told her that he had been married with three kids?
Mm-hmm.
That he asked about her, you know, all these right. years. And none of that turned out to be true. Unless, you know, we don't know what Yumi actually, maybe she thought it was him. And
yeah,
that's a mystery that we don't have the answer to even finishing the book. We don't know what.
Susan doesn't know.
Right.
But Yumi never said to her, well, anyway, okay, so it is really, this is why you'll never really know your whole story.
Mm-hmm.
But when she finds out about
Elizabeth, finds the aunt, yeah.
Yeah, she finds the aunt and right away she says, welcome to the family, without right. even knowing. I mean, just seeing her face, they had the same round face and almond nose or whatever. And she said, welcome to the family. And in all the years she had been going back and forth with Yumi, she had never actually had that. And it was instantaneous with an aunt who hadn't even proved it yet through a test. Right.
And then they did take the test.
Yeah.
I think even at one point Yumi said something about, yes, we're biological, but it's complicated family or something mm-hmm. that even you're not basically telling her you want to be part of this family and you're.
You keep pushing to be part of this
you
family.
You keep pushing to be part of this family.
Which is so awkward. It makes you feel so weird. And here's this aunt. Welcome to the family.
Yeah.
You look just like us. I'd know you anywhere. And her biological father didn't have other children.
He didn't have any other kids. Yeah.
And he would have welcomed her, she thinks, the aunt thinks, and would have wanted kids. And she was just so welcoming. And they were called, her last name was the Cranes.
The Cranes, which, you know, is such a running theme with through the Crane. Book. With, yeah. you know, the origami and, yeah.
Well,
yeah. yeah. So she did write to Yumi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, did not go well.
No, Yumi pretty much was like, you've crossed the final line or whatever. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Stay out of, now you have everything you need, move along type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, wow. And she read that. This is always interesting how life is, right? She read her email while she was meeting her aunt. So those conflicting feelings of like reading, like she felt so guilty, but this is actually so wonderful. She goes
a joyous occasion, then marred by,
yeah,
you know, somewhat marred by the harshness of Yumi. Just can't, you know, Yumi so was so, I don't know, emotionally cut off, just, you know, wouldn't emotionally stingy with Susan.
Yeah, stingy. That's a good word.
Emotionally stingy, you know.
And then the other thing that really struck me in this, and I was thinking that you would have this as well, is just that she always was trying to be more Japanese or feel Japanese or inherit, you know, her parents were Japanese.
She never felt Japanese enough. You know?
And she kind of forgot she was half white. And now she's got, they fought in the Civil War. The whole
right.
family history that's white, the Cranes and the small town and the Civil War and all. And they were also military people like her uh-huh. father. And she had never considered all this. Like she had, but not really.
So it was so focused on the Japanese part because raised by two Japanese parents, yeah. her mother was, you know, Yumi Japanese. So it just wasn't part of her life. So yeah.
And she had this experience that I had with my own aunt recently, actually, my biological aunt, where her aunt said, I would have kept you and raised you and loved you. And which is so, I mean, first of all, my aunt said that too. It's so loving. But then she also had that guilt of, I don't even know if it's guilt, but that weird thing that adoptees have. Well, we live in two worlds.
Right. Uh-huh. And I highlighted, you know, she said, my heart split. On the one hand, her welcoming kindness, she would have taken me in. On the other hand, my entire life growing up with my Japanese American family swept away. My childhood vanished. The mint green house on Summit Street. I was in a tsunami floating away from the foundations of my known life. Her words were kind, but my heart was shattered. And this is what we talk about all the time. This is why I highlighted. It showed just how random my life was. How I could have so easily not existed at all if Yumi had had the resources and courage to find an abortionist, or how I could have ended up being raised by a completely different family, mm-hmm. my genetic family, or by someone else, anyone else. We always talk about this.
I knew you were going to see that too. I just felt like that. I felt like that's the crux of this book right there. And then because it would erase her other life where she loved her parents. I mean, 17 years, her mom moved in with them and was grandmother and so close to her dad, and they were loving and wonderful. And then here, what is this loving aunt? So at first you're like, oh, that's so neat. And then you're like, wait, you're not really anywhere. It's so strange.
It's funny because I, right before on the way home, I was talking to Becker, my son, and somehow it came up and I said, well, you have kept privilege. And he goes, well, what is that? And I, you know, and I've talked about, you grew up with mirroring. You know, we were talking about how his girlfriend had said he and his dad, like,
oh my God, they're so similar.
How they're so similar. And people like me that didn't have mirrors, we didn't have, you know, we were just randomly placed in families that we have no genetic connection to, oftentimes nothing in common with. So I said, it's random. It's completely random. And so we were just talking about it on the way before you and I hopped on.
That's so interesting. Bill and I had this conversation ourselves too. He was like, well, couldn't anybody have that? I said, not really. This is so specific to this cult, to us, to our group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did Becker say? Was he just like, wow, I have to think about that? It's like a...
Yeah. Well, but what he did say is like, you know, well, then I wouldn't be here. You know, right. is what he said, you know, had it.
Right. Like, and we don't want any of that. Like, you don't want,
it's
I don't
not,
want to be.
Yeah. I was like, no. that wasn't, you know, like, of course, I understand that. Mm-hmm. But the system is messed up. That's what I was having that conversation with him about. But.
Well, and then the adoptee has to balance the feelings of it all. So like, mm-hmm. it's so nice to be wanted by another family and loved that's your family genetically. But then you also had a whole life, which if you switch any sliding doors, is your friends, it's you and I.
Yeah.
It's our children. I mean, nobody would change that. But it would be nice if we could help the next group along the way, do this.
Not right? have to go through this. Yeah.
Which kind of leads to the next chapter.
Well, and then this, we didn't finish because mm-hmm. the sad part of the chapter was Elizabeth dying. So Susan mm-hmm. had a short period of time with her, but a really, really loving period of time with her.
Oh, and, she talked about.
And then the family welcomed her. The rest of the family welcomed her. So she's
at the funeral. Everyone's loving.
Yeah. And, you know, she's in touch with them.
Yeah.
Because this was all very recently, because then we get to, well, she gets her next chapter is got OBC.
Got OBC. Got your original birth certificate. And there's a line in here. She said something. I've been waiting 66 years or something. This is how old we are to get our original birth certificate. It's so strange to me. Like, even reading it, it's weird to me.
She brought up Georgia Tan. You know,
me too.
I had a conversation at work this morning with a couple of people who about adoption. One guy had an adopted older brother. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, he had a great life. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to try to explain this to him, but I did try to explain, well, you know, here we don't get our records, our medical history, everything is hidden from us. In large part due to a woman named Georgia Tan. You know, mm-hmm. people don't know our history.
No, and when she had her birth certificate, she already knew who the parents were now. Mm-hmm. She knew her name was Mika and all these things, but you still devour it. You read everything on it. Like, when I got my birth certificate this year, I knew everything, but I stare at it all the time. To me, it's just bizarre to hold in my hands that mm-hmm. this took place. And there was a nice doctor on there, which I thought was interesting. Yumi had said the doctor had been nice to her. And she said, well, thank God she had that doctor who she said went on to be kind of someone who helps women with you know, all sorts of issues. So I don't know. It's so how all of this happened at once for her. Then the last part I was just sobbing in this part.
Well, then when she had her daughter had the baby and then it's COVID, right?
COVID and just how.
Yeah. How recent this was.
How much that brought up COVID, how cruel it is to old people and to mm-hmm. everybody.
I was reading it and just thinking, gosh, if we knew then what we know now, right? Like it wouldn't have had to have been like that.
Right. I mean, because her adopted mom who had been living in the room where now the baby was born, which made that kind of beautiful because we have a room in our house we call the Columbine room from like, we have all these like little cherished things in it, but now her mother, she was sad, had to leave that room and go to an older folks home in her neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But then the new baby was born there and they had a little compound going on. And then the mom, you know, couldn't see anybody. I mean, they could bring the baby to the window and she had a mask on it. And when you have dementia and all that, you don't understand.
I know. It's what a, oh gosh, so sad.
So, and her mom got so loving at the end. She was just loving and just wanted to be loved, and they couldn't even touch her. Like, she was dying, and they had to all be there with masks on. And she's thinking, for what? Yeah. Who are we protecting? She's dying. Her writing, though, was so rich. Like, now she has this little baby, and she is the most Japanese person in the family now.
Susan, after her mother died. Yeah, so then her mom dies.
Yeah.
And then she decides, well, she's going to tell Yumi, because Yumi used to be in touch with her mom.
Respected her mom, yeah.
Yeah, so she emailed her and said, you know, basically, I don't know that you want to hear from me, but she died. And then Yumi wrote her back right away. So
she did. And she sent a picture of her granddaughter.
Right, of Sequoia.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Which would be her great-granddaughter for Yumi, right?
Yumi's great-granddaughter, yeah. That's where it stands, right? I mean, I guess guarded would be the right word, you know?
Yeah, she said they started to have the relationship that they had before, the back and forth, but it was distant and strange, and then nice things, then lots of time would go by. And then her birthday came and went unacknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's like the same. And we're going to talk to Susan, but it's like.
Yeah, well, Susan, yes. We do continue the conversation with Susan. So,
yeah.
I want to give the book a hug.
Me too. And I want everybody to read it. I think, you know how we always recommend American Baby and other books to people?
This is on the list too.
This is on the list because I think it's written so well, and it's such a good, it's like A.M. Holmes' book, right? The Mistress's Daughter. It just makes you go, oh, like, aha, it's strange. And shows every viewpoint, but written in such a rich way.
Uh-huh. Talented writers, you know?
Yeah. Well.
Gift of with words. Well, Louise, I'll see you in a minute.
I'll see you in a minute.
Yeah. Hello. Well, this is an episode we've been waiting for because we've gone through this incredible memoir. Just, I can't say enough good things about it. So beautifully written and so soulful and deep and wonderful. And I was so lucky to have met Susan in person, which is rare. So all that said, I want to welcome Susan Keough Itu, author of I Would Meet You Anywhere. Oh, such a great
book. I have the jealous. I'm still jealous I didn't meet you in person, but here you are.
I forgot my copy. I was going to hold mine up, but I left it upstairs.
We'll hold it up for you. Go to YouTube. You can see us holding it up. We're going to miss this book. This is a loved book.
And I'm so glad. I think you have a copy coming your way, Louise, but Susan gave me a signed copy. So, you know, I felt free to, I always use highlighters. And so anyway. I'm so glad to have a clean copy.
Yes. I can't wait to get mine. I know mine's all bent up and dog-eared and written in like exclamation points.
I need to send you a signed copy. I will do that.
Yes.
Yes, I will definitely do that. You need to have one.
And so you've been really rocking the adoptee world with this, with your book. And what's that been like? Because you've been on the road and meeting people. And how's that been like for you in your life as well?
You know, it's been a little overwhelming, but mostly fantastic and just incredible. You know, it's been amazing meeting adoptees everywhere. You know, every time I do an event, I'll ask how many adoptees are here in the room. And sometimes, like when I was in Seattle, it was the majority of the audience. There was like probably 50 or 60 people there, and the majority were adopted people. So that was very cool. And then sometimes it's none. And sometimes
was this the first time you'd been around a lot of adoptees? Like, have you gone to any kind of adoptee retreats or?
Oh, you mean with the book or in general in my life?
In general, like, was this the first time that you had? I mean, like adoptee conferences, and I know you've had little.
I've been to many. I first started going, I think, to the American Adoption Congress, AAC, back in. I don't know when's, maybe the 90s, maybe the 80s.
That you talked about in the book, I know.
Yeah. No, I've been to a lot of adoptee gatherings, so that wasn't a new thing. But it's really nice being out with the book. But I have to say, I also love, and I'm shocked to have non-adoptee audiences. Really? You're interested in this? That's been really very gratifying and very moving to me. One, that they're interested in adoptee experience.
Yeah.
Two, they're actually learning things, which I'm really happy about. Things that I think are kind of basic for us, you know,
right. Basic
ideas around adoption. And then I've been hearing a lot that people are resonating, even though they do not share any of the experience that I've had, that it's resonating anyway, because people are feeling like, for anyone who's felt like an outsider or needing a sense of belonging or finding a place within your family or whatever, I don't know. It's like, it's been very, very, that's been a really surprising thing to me, to find that non-adopted audiences are resonating deeply, which I was not expecting.
I was wondering, are they hearing through it all what you're saying about adoption and the trauma? And because sometimes there's pushback from non-adoptees about that.
Yes. And I think maybe because I do have such strong and positive feelings about my adoptive family, it feels somehow safer for people. And I think the fact that, even though she had a close relationship with her adoptive family, she still wanted to know. She still wanted to search. These things were still important. The relationship was still important, even though, and that one does not negate the other. And I think that's been very illuminating for a lot of readers, which I'm glad about.
I am too, to hear this. We were interviewed on a podcast yesterday that will come out later for mental health. And I was telling the man, you can, because he had the same, he also doesn't have the narrative and he had to learn about it and he's not in our group. Right. And so he was saying, you have, what do people say? You know, you should be lucky, or it's a nice, like, I just thought it was a nice thing, but I said, well, you can have both. You can have a nice thing and want to know. Maybe that is.
And good, have trauma.
And you know, have trauma.
I mean, it doesn't negate the initial trauma.
No. Well, initial trauma and ongoing trauma.
I
think that's been one of the biggest takeaways that I've really been happy about, to be able to, impart that message to people.
We say that with the events that, you know, we went to New York and there's one coming up for Foglift. It's important for non-adoptees also to hear, because otherwise we're in this constant cycle with each other. That's how it changes.
It's like an echo chamber.
Yeah, it's an echo chamber
of like, yes, 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 yes. We all know these things. But to move outside of that, I think it's been really great.
Susan, when you and I met, and this has stuck with me, you were talking about something that had been going on, and you said something about people who were kept having privilege. So now I've kind of said, well, let's just call that what it is, kept privilege. Can you speak to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's something that it's white male privilege or straight privilege or all the privileges that people walk around with that we're unconscious of because, you know, we take it for granted, or able-bodied privilege. There's so many different kinds of privileges that we have. And unless those things are taken away or we don't have them to begin with, it's not something that we're even conscious of. It's like the air that we breathe, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think people who are not adopted really don't think about these things. They don't think about these things that they take for granted. And I think it's often shocking where they're just like, I never thought about that. You know, I never thought about what it's like not to know your medical history, not to have your birth certificate, not to know your heritage, all these things that I think one of the markers of privilege is that you're unaware of having it, unaware of having a privilege until someone points it out to you. And then you're like, I never thought about that.
Yeah. And it can be, I think some of the exposure to, like, your book is a wonderful read. And so it is a, I don't know what the word is, palpable way for people to go, I love this story. Oh, I can relate to this. Oh, that, I didn't know she might have felt like that. Like, I do think there's something in that this kind of book is a crossover book. Like, I would give this, if this were a book club book and I wasn't adopted, I would love this book.
Well, right? Exactly. I was invited to a book club. There was about 12 women there, and none of them had a direct relationship with adoption. Zero. And
that's kind of unusual. Huh?
It is, right?
It is. Well, it goes against the data, right? The statistics. but none of them really had a, you know, there might be like a distant cousin or somebody, but nobody in their direct sphere. And it was very moving to me. It was just that thing that there were things that they had never realized, never thought about, never considered. And they really felt like their eyes had been opened. And that was just incredibly gratifying for me.
It is a good way, I think, for the uninitiated to ease into understanding what adoptees feel, have felt, have gone through, the trauma we've endured. So it is a good kind of ease into, as opposed to throwing the baby thief at them and, you know, read this.
Exactly.
We don't want to throw the baby thief at anybody.
No, I know. One of the interesting things, as it's been out, you know, longer and longer, certain phrases or themes keep coming back at me. And I'm like, oh, someone else said that too. And one of the things that people keep saying is that it's very readable. And I'm like, my daughter, who isn't a big reader, was like, it was really easy to read, Mom. And I'm like, okay, that's good. You know, it's not. And I think that people mean that it's readable, not just that I use easy to read sentences.
I think what they probably mean is that it's not so harsh, right? There's a lot of anger out there.
It's not so complicated. You know what I mean? It's pretty straightforward, and it's pretty, you can just read it, and there's not a lot of things that are too challenging. I mean, they're challenging. I think they're things that are challenging for people, but I think somehow it's something that people feel like they can read.
You have a subtle way of, in your writing, which I love, and we love this about A.M. Holmes too, with The Mistress's Daughter, you can take your own story and have like one line at the end of a chapter, or maybe right before the end of the chapter, or maybe in the middle when you're figuring it out, that kind of is like, that is it. It's like the one line. There's so many where I'll just be like, okay, that sums up everything in that one line. The rest is a wonderful, readable story. But there is that line, and that's a gift, because it's easy to read, but it's also like, I think about it. Sarah and I finish, you know, you hear us talk about your chapters in-depthly, kind of embarrassingly for us, and whatever we're taking in. But later we think about it. Like, I'll think about it longer, like, oh, that was really interesting, or a cool line, or because it sums up how adoptees feel. So when adoptees are reading it, you're like, yeah. But when outsiders are reading it, they can be, that's a good story. And that's interesting. I didn't know someone felt that way. And is that how all adoptees feel? You know, I think it goes both ways. So it's that's a gift.
Thank you. I mean, and I have to say, none of this was conscious. Like, let me bury some little gem of insight in here. It's like, no, I was just how my brain works. Do you know what I mean?
It's the mark of a writer. I mean, let's face it. That's what writers do. But what I'm happy that you touched on, the sadness of your friend committing suicide, and then later your passing thoughts about it. Yes. That is an important, it's so vital that we get this message out there. And because it's so hard. Like Louise said, when we were interviewed for this mental health podcast that has a reach of millions of people, mental health, and also therapists. Like, I just recently found an EMDR therapist who wasn't taught anything about adoption. Like, how is it 2024 and we're still here? And it's a multi-layered answer, not the least of which is that it's a big business. So we have to get these stories out and palpable, you know, however that is. But I'm really, really glad you touched on that, because it's just vital that message gets out there. It's the adoptive parents hear this and know that they've got to.
And Susan, you had that. That's what we were saying not to the guy that was interviewed about the suicidal ideation. If happy adoptees have that, right? Think of down the line, because that's the first time on the podcast I've said out publicly, well, I've had that. I had that my whole life. So telling Sarah, we're both like, we get it. But like, I'm sure some of my friends are like, I didn't know that. My husband knows that, but very few people know that.
I think that's one of the things that people who I know had a really hard time reading, because people didn't know or don't know.
How can you tell them?
No, you can't.
And it's interesting. I was going to write an email to a friend who was living with us at that time, needed a place to stay and was living with us. And I know that he had no idea that this was going on with me, but he gave me this piece of music and I just played it over and over and over again. It was this very kind of meditative instrumental piano music, but it calmed me and it gave me a sense of solace. And I just remember playing it over and over and over again. Right. Mm. Anyway, and he has had this tremendous response to the book. And I just heard that piece of music recently, and it brought me right back to that time and how I just sat and played it on repeat, you know, and I was just in this incredible funk and just listening to this music like in a trance. Right. And I was going to write to him and say, you know, you had no idea. You were with me during that time, and you gave me something that was like, it was like a lifeline. Like yeah. It helped me get through my days. I know you don't even know that. Mm-hmm. Reading the book impacted him so much, and he doesn't even know his part in that. And so I wanted to write him a little thing and thank him, you know, for giving me this thing. Yeah. And he had no idea that I listened to it all day long and what it did for me. Like it gave me something.
You can send them this recording.
Yeah.
The suicidal ideation. When Sarah and I talked about that on the podcast, I thought about later that night, the first person I ever exposed that to a little bit was a guy I was madly in love with in high school. And I kind of was flipping out, and he was like, what is wrong with you? And he's from such like the tight knit family. All the brothers are the same type of thing. And I said, I don't know. And I remember being so scared because I told somebody, like, this is how I'm feeling. And then he didn't reject me. He was really loving to me. But I remember the look on his face was like, I mean, he was a young high school guy, right? But his face was like, you're crazy. Like, I saw the look on his face like, wow, she's crazy. I'm not really in love with her. And we've been together a long time. I didn't know she was crazy. I saw that look. But then we stayed together. Things go on. I still know him. But I felt like that I should write him a letter and be like, listen. He probably didn't even think about it, but to me, it was like a big thing. I thought about it for years. Oh my God, remember when I did that? You know, it was shame.
Yes. You know, one of the things that has been the most surprising to me since the book came out is people from my younger life, high school, college, my college roommate, my college boyfriend, who I literally saw every day, have reached out to me and said, I had no idea you were going through this. I had no idea you were doing this. And my college boyfriend, it was so funny. He's like, all I remember is you walking around with this manila envelope. Walking around with this manila envelope, like it was like your baby or something. I'm like, yes, it was. It was baby me. You know, it was like, and I had all my documents in it.
Oh.
And all my papers and all my notes and everything. And this manila envelope like had my life.
Yes.
And it was like, I just remember that manila envelope, but I had no idea. I didn't know you were leaving campus and going to these meetings in New York City. I had no idea and my roommate too, that I lived with for a year and a half, she's like, I had no idea. And then my high school friend was like, what? And I was like, yeah, I think I kept things pretty compartmentalized.
Yes.
And I kept them pretty much inside. So a lot of people were like, wait, I knew her then. I knew her then. And this is a complete shock to me that this was happening. I'm like, yeah, you know, sorry. Not sorry, but just that's how it was. And thank God I had this from a very young age, from age 18, I had this adoptee community. And I would take everything and pour it out in these meetings, these ALMA meetings. And I had people where I felt like they understood and they could relate and understand to what I was saying. And it's just so interesting. But then when I went back to my regular life, I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
You know,
I know for myself, I kept a lot of those feelings to myself because I didn't feel safe. I kind of, this is a really not a great analogy, so to speak, but it's kind of like when you, with a troop, maybe like if you're going off to war and you've got your little troop, you feel safe with them. And then you get out into the world and you kind of have to put your protective gear
Absolutely.
On. Right.
Absolutely.
So I feel like it's kind of the same thing until I found adoptees, which wasn't until, I mean, a group, you know, talking about adoption, Louise, and I kept all that stuff to myself. Never would I have told anybody that suicide entered my mind. Never.
I never did. I had one person, and even my best friend, Amy, I've talked about it lately with her things. She's like, I didn't know. I mean, because you don't, if you're not an adoptee, you don't get it, sort of. And you also, I didn't get that.
Well,
I
people
didn't get
do
it.
Get.
Well, right.
There are other people that are suicidal. I don't.
But I mean about our adoption stuff. Yeah. Like I didn't know how to even say what my stuff was or what. Which
no,
is,
there's no words.
There's right, no words.
Plain, there's not a language for it.
Which is back to like you were so young, and so yeah. This, you were sort of even though we know you. You were a different Susan. Like I was, you were like a heroine in this book for me. Like,
oh,
wow, she was so young.
You were
like,
so bold.
So was, bold. I'm getting on the bus. I'm going on the, going
very,
to the hospital.
Really impressive and bold.
Margaret Katz from American Baby. You're like bold.
I just had, yeah. And I had no, it's so funny. Like looking back on it, I don't have any, who was that person? And it's like, but that's, that was it, you know? I mean, it's funny. My boyfriend in college, we were really close. We saw each other every single day, except when I got on the bus and went to New York. But he's got a very few mentions in the book. But one is he's like, I don't want you to get hurt. And I say, you know, I was already hurt. I already, and I needed to do this. But I got this sense, he was being very protective, that he felt very uncomfortable with me doing this because it seemed like a can of worms to him. And it was, of course it was. But I got very quickly that it made him uncomfortable to talk about it. And so I was like, okay, there's going to be other people that I'm going to talk to about it.
It does make people uncomfortable.
Well, I'm wondering, did it make him uncomfortable because of the potential of the relationship changing? And
he didn't want to see me get hurt. And he saw that there was potential for great hurt here. Mm-hmm. And I think that was it. I don't think there was anything really complicated about it. It was just that this seems like a risky proposition. You know, this seems like something that could be hard and chaotic and painful. And why not just avoid that?
We just interviewed Ken a few weeks ago. And he said when he went to look, he deliberately, because he's a pleaser. Many of us are pleasers, right? So you instantly want to jump into something and do it. But he's like, I methodically thought about if I find my birth mother, go down this route, I can't close the door. This is going to change my life. And that's the big thing about, you know, especially for young people, because they get on or you're searching and maybe you're not prepared. That's why you were so young. You had so many wits about you. And you really, because for me, it took a lot longer to come into that. So it's just very impressive in that way because you really were bold. I mean, just the sense of any moment could be such a rejection. It was like,
you know, I think about the impact that books had on me. Of course, the Anna Fisher book was, I really, really think about that book and that moment changed the course of my life. It really did. Reading about the life of another adoptee, I was only 13 years old, you know?
Gosh, that's really incredible. I mean,
it
right?
was really. He really claimed that identity of adoptee and also was trying very hard to find her records, very, very similar. And it rocked my world. It was just, it was incredible. And what if I had not found that book? I could have gone AIDS. You know what I mean? I would have been, it would have been very different. And I think about that. But then I think about another book that I read when I was in college, when I was starting to search, I found another book and it was the case studies of the UK adoptees who were interviewed after records were opened there. And there were these case studies and I think there was like 10 of them and 8 of them were kind of horrible. People found just terrible things, a lot of mental illness, some suicide, outright rejection. It was not pleasant, right? Mm-hmm. And then 2 of them ended up with good situations. And I really thought about that very carefully. I thought about all the 8 horrible situations. And I was like, if I find this, do I want to keep going? Do I want to do this no matter what? And the answer was always yes. It was like, mm-hmm. I just need to know. I just need to know. And if it's going to be one of these awful things, okay, I'm going to deal with it. I felt like I tried to set myself up with the lowest possible expectations that it could be something really, really terrible. And I tried to brace myself for that. And I think that really helped me to go into it with my eyes as open as possible. I mean, there's nothing in those case studies that remotely echoed my situation. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't expect this. I didn't expect something that was so up and down, back and forth for decades. I did that is something I was not expecting. And I had a hard time dealing with, but it was the situation and I had to deal with it.
There probably weren't really long-term case studies to, you know, like, remember the Michael Apted movies where you would get to 7-Up and then all that?
Yes.
Right.
It would be interesting to do that with adoption. Sure, but you were kind of, there weren't studies like that. So it is charting new territory. And I wanted to, before I forget, one thing that really was so moving in the book, I don't know why this stuck out to me, was the boy in your class when you found out that he was adopted. Oh my gosh. It just, just that I have tears thinking about it. It was so moving. And just that understanding of each other, you know, that you just don't
have
like
two souls connecting at a young age, having that, like, you see that you and the other, but you're not even like friends or whatever. What happened with him? Do you know anything? Or just...
I do. Well, he just passed away last year. And his sister reached out to me on Instagram. And she was like, oh, I see that you have this book out. And I just follow anybody that I know is an adoptee. And I was like, oh, my God. And I said, have you read it yet? And she said, no. And I said, you know, your brother's in it. She was like, what? You're kidding. And I'm like, oh boy. Oh boy. You know, and she said, I'm so glad that he was even able to talk to you then back in junior high or whatever it was. And she said that he was not able to really explore that part of him and that was really hard and that it impacted him in a way that was really hard. And that I think she went on to search and found her birth family. She was also adopted.
Oh, so two non-related adoptees in the same family. Okay.
Yes. And I was not that aware of her. I mean, I think I knew that she was adopted, but she was several years younger than us.
Yeah, different grade.
I knew who she was, but we didn't really have very much contact. Oof, boy, that just really, really moved me to hear from her. She was like, is it going to make you cry? Is it going to make me cry when I read it? And I said, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes me cry.
I don't even know them. So.
Yeah. And so I'm really hoping that I can set up a reading back there so I'll be able to meet her in person.
Yeah.
But that just.
Well, and you don't know who you're touching. This is why we do this, the podcast and your book. From the beginning, Sarah and I, we've had letters. I have a high school friend who wrote me about big stuff. I didn't know. We sat next to each other all the time. And she's like, I listen to your podcast. Yes. I've gone through. I'm like, I had no idea.
That's right. I think when we share these things, I think it really shocks people. Or it's like, what is that thing of like, be kind because you don't know what people are going through. You know, I'm paraphrasing that phrase, but it's so true that you don't know what people are going through. And that is the thing that we just don't know. We don't realize. And people are living these lives and there's so much going on internally that we just don't talk about in everyday life.
Yeah.
Either as young people or even now. One person, it's so funny, said a coworker said, I read your book. And I said, And it's so personal. I said, And they said, are you sure it's okay that I'm reading this? And I'm like, well, I did publish it, so it's got to be okay. You know, but I think they were a little taken aback that now they know all these things about me that are kind of deep.
Yes.
I had that experience at work. Our main boss at where I work, she said, my podcast, she downloads it, you know, for to help us out, and she'll listen to it, but not always, I don't think. But she said to me, it's so personal. How do you put that out there? You know, it's so personal. I'm like, it's what we need to do.
Yes. But I think for people who don't do this on a regular basis, it's a little shocking.
Even for us, if it's a little, I have a group in my area of adoptees that we're all getting to be better friends and closer. We meet all the time. It's wonderful. Central Coast adoptees, if you're looking in the area. When you first show up and if people do listen, it's a little weird because they know so much about you before you meet them. And you're like, oh God, what have I said down there? Like, you know, it is like that. It's because we are sort of, I guess when you write your book, you're going around seeing everybody. And Sarah and I just went and met adoptees for the first time in New York in a big group like that. And it is kind of weird that people know so much about you. Like these women standing there were like, oh,
I know, and you and Sarah, and they started talking like us and knowing our thing. I'm like, oh my God. It's a strange feeling, right? Because we do put so much out there, but we're also in a little bit of a vacuum with ourselves because we're on Zoom, we're interviewing somebody that's very deep and personal for us. We put it out there and we don't focus on it, but there's a lot out there.
We feel like we're in this little room together.
Exactly.
Like sitting in this little pod and we're just talking and, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, but other people are kind of like got their ear to the wall.
Yeah.
And for as many people as it may not hit with or they don't like it or push back, it's for the one person who goes, I thank you. I'm so glad that happened. I'm so glad I heard that or she said that or for the book that you're reading. So many people followed along with your book with us.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Although we have heard from a few people like I had to just finish it. I couldn't put it down. So
well, I was wondering, yeah. especially the most recent was like, oh my God, spoilers. But I guess if people are reading along, then
most people passed us, I think, because we're very in control of not, we want to keep reading. I like stop myself.
But. You're incredible. It's amazing. Oh, so I guess we should talk about questions. There's so many times where you're like, I wonder what Susan, blah, blah, blah. And you have some question and I'm like, listen, this is the answer. And
you're yelling at us.
I'm yelling at my phone when I'm listening and I'm like, this is it. And of course you can't hear me. So
it's been so fun and rewarding to read your book. And I've just loved every minute of it. I guess you've had all positive feedback. Has there been any kind of negative pushback from people not in the adoptee community or even in the adoptee community? It's all been good, right?
I think people are kind of, I'm sure there are people who have negative responses. I'm sure they're out there, but they have not let me know.
I don't mean in terms of a review. I mean, in terms of, well, hey, wait a minute. What is this trauma you speak of?
No. I mean, I think the thing is, I feel like, I don't know, whatever it is, the whole thing of writers are like show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I really, that's kind of how I write. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of showing.
And me too.
It's not a lot of telling. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm just showing you my experience. Here it is. You can draw your own conclusions. You can see what you say. And I feel like there's not a whole lot to argue with. You know, I'm not saying a lot of you should think this or you should take this away from
it. No, it's your authentic conclusion. Story.
This is my experience. I'm just showing you and think what you think.
It's a really great way to, it's the way you write and it's who you are, but it's also a really great, like I said earlier, you know, entry into understanding, nothing offensive. You know, it's not this angry, I abolish all adoption. You know, it's not that road. So it's a.
Yeah.
It's,
and I might even feel that way.
Right.
Inside, but I feel like I've been pretty, I don't know, so far it hasn't been that long. It's only been out, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months, anything's possible. So we'll see.
It's done very well. It's gotten a few awards. It's up for, tell us.
Well, it's up for, this is next week. Am I going next week? I think week after next.
Yeah,
the National Book Critics Circle Award. That is like pretty stunning to me. And that whole thing, it's an honor just to be nominated. I'm like shocked. I'm honestly shocked. But
that is amazing.
We're not shocked. We are not shocked.
A friend of mine was like, I Googled, what are the odds of being up for this nomination? And they were like, 52,000 books were published in 2023. Uh-huh. So they're like 52, you know, that's the ratio of like what you've got a 1 in 52,000 chance of this happening. And I was like, oh my God. But literally, it is an honor just to be nominated. And I'm just super grateful. And I'm nervous to be there. I kind of don't want to have to give a speech. So I'm kind of like, no, don't pick me. Don't pick me. I don't want to give a speech. You know?
But pick you. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The adoptees are rooting for you.
Thank you. Thank you. But I made a point of like getting all the other books in my category and they're really outstanding. So I feel like I'm in just incredible company and everybody deserves recognition. One of them is actually really close friend of mine, and another is like a sort of close friend of mine. So it's like, it's very weird that, yeah, A Secret Harvest is an incredible book by David Mas Masumoto. And it's about a hidden relative that nobody knew about.
Really?
For decades. It's an incredible book, and it's illustrated by one of my closest friends, Patricia Wakita.
I'll have to look at that.
And it's really, really beautiful. It's called Secret Harvest, and it's an incredible book. So I would be overjoyed if it won. And then the other books are just amazing as well. So,
well, at least you'll have fun there because you'll be with friends too. That's cool.
I will have fun. I'm hoping that I will have fun. I was stressing a lot about what to wear, and I figured that out. And I actually watched the YouTube of last year's, and I'm like, oh, okay, phew. It's not like the Academy Awards. This is good.
No, these are writers, not actors.
These are writers, and people pretty much look like writers. And it's like, yes, in this auditorium, and it's not big tables.
With right.
Doing like reaction shots of everybody is the
right
winner gets not spoken. So,
is there any place that, like, do you have any readings coming up that listeners could go to that are coming up at the in the April, next, your April?
Yes, the next, I have one coming up in Portland in March next week. But in April, I will be at the ASAC conference, which is the Alliance for the Study of Adoption and Culture, which is my personal favorite adoption conference because it really features adoptee scholars, researchers, creative people, artists. It's really all about the study of adoption and culture in every way. It's so, and it makes me feel like we're serious people. You know, I mean, like you should take us seriously, not that we're serious people, but you should take us seriously because we are contributing to culture and art and science and research about adoption, and it's important. And we are like taking agency over these fields. You know, it's not other people writing about us or studying, and doing data around us. I just love that conference, and it makes me feel really proud of adoptee
scholars
and creative people. It's really good.
I didn't know about that.
Where is it and when is it?
It's April 4 to 6. At Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be speaking on a panel of adoptees and aging, which I think is a really, really important topic. And I'm going to be speaking with three adoptees. Three of us are named Susan, and then one is named So Susan Devan Harness, Sue Harris O'Connor, myself, and Mark Haglund. And we're all, you know, in our 60s plus. Mm-hmm. And talking about how adoption changes and shifts as we age and as we grow older and how it impacts us through all the decades of our lives. And
will this be recorded? Can people, do you have any idea?
No, I'm not sure. I am not sure. I don't know. I have to find out. I'm not sure, but it's a really tremendous conference. I don't know if it's biannual, but it's a really good one. So Google it. And also there's a journal called the Journal of Adoption and Culture, which is published by my same publisher, Ohio State University Press. And it's a really beautiful, thoughtful journal on issues of adoption and culture, which are, it's so good. Like really, really analyzing film, books.
Oh, I'm glad you're turning this on to this because we can put this on our show notes.
If we could get the links, that would be great.
I'll send you the links. It's a really important journal. And it's just like, this is something we should take seriously. Right. This is like serious thought, and it's for critical adoption studies. You know, there are a number of faculty around the country and around the world who are, this is a very serious area of inquiry and study. And yeah, it makes me feel really proud to be part of that.
Yeah, I'm glad we asked because I didn't even know about this. I think I saw you post it on Twitter, but I didn't realize what it is.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to the conference because if you want, and you can see the program, and the program is really astounding. It's really impressive. And yeah, it's great. And it's great to be with other adoptees who are really taking this seriously and making our voices heard in the world in a way that, okay, I hate to use this word, with legitimacy. It's a terrible word to use in this context. But, you know, we're not just spouting off our mouths, we're doing serious stuff around this.
Yeah. You know,
and we're thinking about it in a serious way. And these things really impact us all. And so, yeah, it's my favorite.
That's great. Susan, thank you so much for providing us such a wonderful book. And
oh my gosh, I do have a question. So Kaz really didn't know you existed that whole time? He didn't know you were the sister? Okay.
No, that's
was there a secret thing to that? Okay.
No, that's what he said. That's what he said. It seems hard to imagine, you know, given all these clues about me all over everywhere, but that's what he said.
I can say it could be a younger boy thing, because once driving in the car with my son, you know, he was staring off into the distance and I said, you know, what are you thinking about? And he goes, Mom, I think you think I'm having all these deep thoughts, but really I'm just staring out into space. So I think maybe that applies to Kaz.
Could be so. Could be so. Yeah. If there are any other burning questions, I'm going to go back and listen to some of them, because I know that there were questions.
There was a couple.
You know, and we could always do a little addendum, you know.
No. It's okay. I'll just email you and just be like, you were wondering about this.
Well, and the baby, we recently read a few episodes ago of the baby that you were carrying around. What was that? That situation. So you were comforting the baby.
At the Tyco?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I just happened to be there. The mother of the baby was doing some documentary film or something. And the baby needed caring.
And was she just totally unconcerned? I think that's what we were talking about, that thing with kept people. Maybe she just, it's not a worry or something. Yeah.
Not a big deal.
I can't handle hearing a baby cry at all. So.
Yeah.
We're going to be following along with what you're doing. And I hope we'll stay in touch, obviously.
Obviously.
Yes.
I just want to thank you both. It has been like profoundly moving for me to have you read so thoughtfully and so carefully. And I haven't had this kind of conversation with anybody, I don't think, where every single chapter is like dissected with such love and care and such attention. And I, you know, there's some quote that attention is a form of love. And I have felt so loved and seen. And it's just been so meaningful for me to feel, to have that attention and that such careful reading. It's really meant so much to me. And I look forward to it every week. And my husband and I listen together and he's like, they picked that up. Oh, wow. You know, and we're both like exclaiming. And
we've given him some shout outs. We're like, he's cool. He's
making noise.
Has your back, right?
Sure does. He really does. Yeah.
Yeah. No, well, thank you, because
we wouldn't have been able to do it without such a deep, thoughtful, well-written, beautiful prose. I mean, just beautiful. And that's not always the case. So it was such a joy for us.
It was a joy to read, really. We're going to grieve it. So
yes.
I'm going to give it to people. I think it's a great.
Oh, yeah.
It is a great gift. You know, there's certain books you like to gift now, and this is one of them. So
that means so much to me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Take good care.
Big hug.
Take care.
Big hug.
Big hug.
Yes. Bye.
Bye. I love Susan.
I do too. Just, I am going to miss her. I'm going to miss the book, and seeing her even just on Zoom here, it just fills me up. It's like,
I know. I mean, that's the thing about reading a memoir, is really getting in deep to someone's thoughts and feelings. And Susan is a friend, but I would have felt that way even if we hadn't met her. You
Same.
Know? And I like that the scholarly work that's going on.
Oh my gosh. How neat.
Yeah, so important.
And advancing it with
to have
aging.
It come from a, to have all this stuff come from actual data and studies and intellectual, not emotions, you know,
right.
Which is important to get.
Not just yelling into the void. Yeah.
Right. It's important to continue to get these messages out there. So
I didn't even know that was happening with the cultural, and I'm excited to put that in our notes for people.
Definitely.
Well, this has been a great season. It's
been a great season. We miss you, Susan. But now, if you want to read along, as we've mentioned before, but next week is the time, We're starting Relinquished, The Politics of Adoption and the Privilege of American Motherhood by Gretchen Sisson, S-I-S-S-O-N.
This is going to be good.
It's going to be good because it covers current, our current time. So I'm excited to dig into this. It's a totally different direction than what we just came from.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of topics on this, I have a feeling.
Yeah. Well, Louise.
What do we say?
We say another great episode.
Another great episode. See you next time.
Thanks so much for listening today.
And remember, if you'd like to share your stories or suggest any guests for our show, you can find us on all the socials at The Making of Me Podcast.
And again, we have a Patreon page so that we can continue to bring these great adoption stories to you. So if you want to find that and donate or contribute in any way, find us at patreon.com searching adoption: The Making of Me.
Bye.
See you next time.